Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The next events of the Ruth Stefan Poetry Center are these. Next Tuesday, March 11, we will present a reading of elegies here in this auditorium at 8:30. The following week, on Friday, March 21st, we will sponsor with the Black Student Union a program of black poetry in the CUP, the Campus Christian Center, at 8:30. Tonight, it's my privilege to introduce to you John Haynes. Mr. Haynes, although formerly an art student in Washington, New York, Washington, D.C., that is, and New York, has lived entirely in Alaska since 1954 on a farm that he homesteaded there in a house he built himself. He is the author of Winter News, 1966, a book noted for its clarity, its accuracy of diction, and its stunning images, particularly of the silence and cold of the far north. In 1965, he was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship for Poetry, and in 1968, a grant from the National Council on the Arts. Mr. John Haynes.
I'll read first from Winter News. I don't like to talk about these poems very much anymore. I've talked about them so much. Afterwards, I have some new poems. Winter News. They say the wells are freezing at Northway where the cold begins. Oil tins bang as evening comes on, and clouds of steaming breath drift in the street. Men go out to feed the stiffening dogs. The voice of the snowman calls the white-haired children home. Poem of the Forgotten. I came to this place, a young man, green and lonely. Well quit of the world, I framed a house of moss and timber, called it a home, and sat in the warm evening singing to myself as a man sings when he knows there is no one to hear. I made my bed under the shadow of leaves and awoke in the first snow of autumn, filled with silence. The mole. Sometimes I envy those who spring like great black and gold butterflies before the crowded feet of summer. Brief, intense, like pieces of the sun, they are remembered and celebrated long after night has fallen. But I believe also in one who in the dead of winter tunnels through a damp, clinging darkness, nosing the soil of old gardens. He lives unnoticed, but deep within him there is a dream of the surface one day breaking and crumbling, and a small brown furred figure stands there blinking at the sky as the rising sun slowly dries his strange, unruly wings. The House of the Injured. I found a house in the forest, small, windowless, and dark. From the doorway came the close, suffocating odor of blood and fur mixed with dung. I looked inside and saw an injured bird that filled the room, fluttering against the walls. With a stifled croaking, it lunged toward the door as if held back by an invisible chain. The beak was half eaten away, and its heart beat wildly under the rumpled feathers. I sank to my knees. A man shone the face of God. Foreboding. Something immense and lonely divides the earth at evening. For 9 years I have watched from an inner doorway, as in a confused vision, man-like figures approach, cover their faces, and pass on, heavy with iron and distance. There is no sound but the wind crossing the road, filling the ruts with a dust as fine as chalk. At the closing of an inner door, the day begins its dark journey across 9 bridges, wrecked one by one. And when the green man comes, the man is clothed in birch bark. Small birds cling to his limbs, and one builds a nest in his ear. The clamor of bedlam fills his hair. A wind blowing in his head shakes down a thought that turns to moss and lichen at his feet. His eyes are blind with April. His breath distilled of butterflies and bees, and in his beard the maggot sings. He comes again with litter of chips and empty cans, his shoes full of mud and dung. An army of shedding dogs attends him. The valley shudders where he stands, redolent of roses, exalted in the streaming rain. The moose head. Stripped of its horns and skin, the moose head is sinking. The eyes have fallen back from their ports into the sleepy green marrow of death. Over the bridge of the nostrils, the small pilots of the soil climb and descend. In the cabin of the skull, where the brain once floated like a ruddy captain, there is just this black water and a faint glowing of phosphorus. Victims. The knife that makes long scars in the flesh lays bare the bones. Pale trees in the forest of blood, where the birds of life and death endlessly weave their nests with straws of anguish. There, the hunter and his quarry. Parting the branches, the doomed animal chokes on his own breath and sees, as in a red mist, his own dripping carcass. The field of the caribou. Moving in a restless exhaustion, humps of earth that rise covered with dead hair. There is no sound from the wind blowing the tattered velvet of their antlers. The gray shepherds of the tundra pass like islands of smoke, and I hear only a heavy thumping, as though far in the west some tired bodies were falling from a cliff. Book of the Jungle. The animal, rising at dusk from its bed in the trampled grass, this is how it all began. Far off, the shaggy tribesmen listened and fed their fires with thorns. Secret paths of the forest, when did your children walk unarmed, clothed only with the shadows of leaves? We are still kneeling and listening, as from the edge of a field there rises sometimes at evening the snort of a rutting bull. Divided, the man is dreaming. One half lives in sunlight. He is the hunter and calls the beasts of the field about him. Bathed in sweat and tumult, he slakes and kills, eats meat and knows blood. His other half lies in shadow and longs for stillness. A corner of the evening where birds rest from flight. Cool grass grows at his feet. Dark mice feed from his hands. Deserted cabin. Here in the yellowing aspen grove on Campbell's Hill, the wind is searching a fallow garden. I remember the old man who lived here. 5 years have gone by, and his house has grown to resemble his life. A shallow cave hung with old hides, rusty traps and chains, smelling of 80 years of unwashed bedding and rotting harness. I see him sitting there now as he used to, his starved animals gathered about his bony knees. He talks to himself of poverty, cursing softly, jabbing a stick at the shadows. The bitterness of a soul would want it only to walk in the sun and pick the ripening berries. It is like coming home late in the evening with a candle in your hand, meeting someone you had forgotten. The voice is strange. It is the cold autumn wind stirring the frozen grass, as if some life had just passed there, bound home in the early darkness. Prayer to the snowy owl. Descend, silent spirit, you whose golden eyes pierce the gray shroud of the world. Marvelous ghost, drifter of the Arctic night, destroyer of those who gnaw in the dark, preserver of whiteness. Next poem is one of a number of poems I've written about dreams. And this one was a result of two dreams. One that I had myself and one that another person had. And somehow they seem to go together. I've never actually could say to myself just why. The dream of February. In the moonlight, in the heavy snow, I was hunting along the sunken road and heard behind me the quiet step and smothered whimper of something following. Ah, tree of panic, I climbed to escape the night as the furry body glided beneath, blinks with steady gaze, and began the slow ascent. And dark blue foxes climbed beside me with famished eyes that glowed in the shadows. I stabbed with a sharpened stick until one lay across the path where ventrals spilled. Then the others melted away. The dead fox moved again. His jaws released the sound of speech. Slowly I toiled up the rotting stairs to the cemetery where my mother lay buried, to find the open grave with a coffin tilted beside it, and something spilled from the bottom, a whiteness that flowed on the ground and froze into mist that enveloped the world. the traveler. Among the quiet people of the forest, I remember an Eskimo walking one evening on the road to Fairbanks. A lamp full of shadows burned on the table before us. The light came as though from far off to the yellow skin of a tent. Thousands of years passed. People were camped on the bank of a river, drying fish in the sun. Women bent over stretched hides, scraping in a kind of furry patience. There were long hunts through the wet autumn grass, meat piled high in caches, a red memory against whiteness. We were away for a long time. The footsteps of a man walking alone on the frozen road from Asia crunched in the darkness and were gone. Time for a cold journey. On the road to the self-contained traveler, I stood like one to whom the great announcements are made. In one hand I held a hard, dry branch with bitter purple fruit. In the other hand, a small blue and yellow bird whose closed eyes stared inward upon the growing darkness. Listening, I could hear within myself the snow that was coming, the sound of a loud, cold trumpet. The tree. Tree of my life. You have grown slowly in the shadows of giants. Through darkness and solitude, you stretch year by year toward that strange clear light in which the sky is hidden. In the quiet grain of your thoughts, the inner life of the forest stirs like a secret still to be named. The immense sadness of approaching winter hangs in the air this cloudy September. Today a muddy road filled with leaves, tomorrow the stiffening earth and a footprint glazed with ice. The sun breaking through still warm, but the road deep in shadow. Your hand in mine is cold. Our berries picked, the mushrooms gathered, each of us hides in his heart a small piece of this summer, as mice store their roots in a place known only to them. We believe in the life to come, when the stark tree stands in silence above the blackened leaf, but now at a bend in the road to stop and listen. Strange song of a southbound bird overflows in the quiet dusk from the top of that tree. The end of the summer. Let the inhuman drab machines patrol the road that leads nowhere, and the men with Bibles and speeches come to the door asking directions. We will turn them all away and be alone. We will not storm what barricades they erect on the Cuban beaches, or set forth on the muddy imperial water. At least we shall go to hell with open faces. The sun keeps its promises, sentry in the cloth of departure. The forest is empty, the people are gone, the smoky paths awaiting the feet of furred and silent soldiers. Death, the surveyor, plots his kingdom of snow. Subversive leaves, you fall and enter the camps of our enemies. unheard of wars sweep down from distant mountains, filling the cemeteries of the unborn. Survivors beat with pale hands upon the windows. Their eyelids are closed and their scars sealed with gauze against the cold. I stare across the threshold of my home and feel the sudden wind that rises like the breath from the grave. Watching the fire. Where are the red men? They should be here. They saw the mound of skulls glowing on the hearth. For them the stone lamp flickered and the drafty cave was walled with visions. The stories they told us were true. We should have believed them. A woman of brute form nurses her child. Wise eyes and a wrinkled skin, forehead of horn. He wears a necklace of fangs and cries softly for flesh and blood. Listening in October. In the quiet house, a lamp is burning. The book of autumn lies open on a table. There is tea with milk in heavy mugs, brown raisin cake, the thoughts that stir the heart with the promises of death. We sit without words, gazing past the limit of fire into the towering darkness. There are silences so deep, you can hear the journeys of the soul, the enormous footsteps downward in a freezing earth. On the road. It is not good to be poor. It is good to listen to the wind, but not when you stand alone on the road at night with all your winter parcels, like a mailbox waiting for a postman who will never arrive. The wind comes in carloads and goes by with a rushing of lights and emptiness. I think only of my home. I have a pair of slippers for a wife whose bare feet are waiting. There is a light through the trees. It is only a simple place with two souls strung together by nerves and poverty. It is not good to be poor, and there are no coins in the wind. The gardener. His hoe makes a hush as if a stone rolled away. We who are standing here in rows, green men, small handfuls of death, we hardly know this one who tends us, dark, inscrutable angel whose step passes by. What is life? There are no roads, but the paths we make through sleep and darkness. An invisible friend, a ghost, like a black wind that buffets and steadies the last bystander who thinks he sees. The tundra. The tundra is a living body, warm in the grassy autumn sun. It gives off the odor of crushed blueberries and gun smoke. In the tangled lakes of its eyes, a mirror of ice is forming, where frozen gut piles shine with a dull rosy light. Coarse, laughing men with their women. One by one, the tiny campfires flaring under the wind, full of blood, with a sound like clicking hoofs, the heavy tundra slowly rolls over and sinks in the darkness. poems that I'm going to read from now on are all poems that, with one exception, have been written since Winter News was published. Some of them, at least, I hope to put in another book. A few of them will be in a book to be published in England in the latter half of this year. This one is called The Stone Harp. I had an idea for several years of writing a poem in which something would be there that I noticed many times when the temperature is at a certain level, usually below zero. There were telephone wires hum, sometimes very loudly, and it always gave me a feeling that somehow there was something I could use or make into a poem. Okay. A road deepening in the north, strung with steel, resonant in the winter evening, as though the earth were a harp soon to be struck. As if a spade rang in a rock chamber, in the subterranean light glittering with mica, a figure like a tree turning to stone stands in its charred roots and tries to sing. Now there is all this blood flowing into the west, ragged holes at the waterline of the sun. That ship is sinking. And the only poet is the wind, a drifter who walked in from the coast with empty pockets. He stands on the road at evening, making a sound like a stone harp strummed by a handful of leaves. Following is a poem of some kind I don't write very often. At least it seems to me to be different. One or two people have liked it, so. Of course, very few people have seen it, actually. Called Certain Old People. With your assistance, aging citizens, the future becomes a road lined with bonfires, coffins, and empty houses. Whenever I look at you, I see you wrapped in old uniforms, hauling on flags, handing out paper poppies and Boy Scout medals. Cunning and boastful, you lead children into a field to let the straw out of dummies, to drill interminably with brooms on their shoulders. Their foreheads are forever marked with your cross of ashes. Somewhere against an embankment, an infantryman sprawls with his shirt blown open, his young face a rotting flower. At his feet, a weathering caption reads, "It's Baulang Chong." And as for you, isn't it time your dead faces let go and return to nature, where like leaves matted, sour and black, they might at least nourish your country's dwindling soil. The flight. It may happen again. This much we can always believe. When our dawn fills with frightened neighbors, and the ancient car refuses to start. The gunfire of locks and shutters echoes next door to the house left open for the troops that are certain to come. We shall leave behind nothing but cemeteries, and our life like a refugee cart overturned on the road, a wheel slowly spinning. Like continents, diminishing to a white stone, so softly smoking in the fog-bound ocean. Equinoctial moons, immense rain barrels spilling their yellow water. Moons like eyes turned inward, hard and bulging on the blue cheek of eternity. And moons half broken, eaten by eagle shadows. But the moon of the poet is soiled and scratched, its seas are flowing with dust. And other moons are rising, swollen like boils. In their bloodshot depths, the warfare of planets silently drips and festers. This is a poem I wrote last winter on a subject which has been rather popular lately. Simply called Guevara. Somewhere inside me, perhaps under my left shoulder, there is a country named Guevara. I discovered it one day in October when I fell into a cave which suddenly opened in my chest. I found myself climbing a hill, steep and slippery with blood. The ghost of a newspaper floated before me like an ashen kite. I was a long way from the top when I halted. I felt something wrong with my life, like a man who has marched for years under an enemy flag. I came down from that hill bearing a secret wound. Though a fever beats there, I still don't know what I suffered. A truce with my own darkness, or some obscure defeat on the red slope of my heart. Choosing a stone. It grows cold in the forest of rubble. There the old hunters survive and patch their tents with tar. They light fires in the night of obsidian. Instead of trees, they burn old bottles and window panes. Instead of axe blows and leaves falling, there is always the sound of moonlight breaking, with brittle stars ground together. The talk there is of deadfalls and pits, armed with splinters of glass, and of how one chooses a stone. The Middle Ages. Always on the point of falling asleep, the figures of men and beasts. Faces deeply grained with dirt, a soiled finger pointing inward. Like Dewar's night, always haunted by two companions. The devil with a face like a matted hog, disheveled and split. And death, half dog, half monkey, a withered bishop with an hourglass. There's a cold lizard on the foot. The lance head glitters in its furry collar. But it's too late now to storm the silence on God's forbidden mountain. You have to go on as the century darkens. The rain still topped in that armored fist. The cauliflower. I wanted to be a cauliflower, all brain and ears. Meditating on the origin of gardens and the divinity of him who carefully binds my leaves. With my blind roots touched by the songs of the worms and my rough throat throbbing with strange vegetable sounds, perhaps I'd feel the parting stroke of a butterfly's wing. Not like my cousins, the cabbages, whose heads tightly folded see and hear nothing of this world, dreaming only on the yellow and green magnificence that is hardening within them. There's a short poem called The End of the Street. It would be at the end of a bad winter, the salty snow turning black, a few sparrows cheeping in the ruins of a dynamited water tower. The car is out of gas. Someone has gone to look. Your evening is here. The color. It was simply a dark, laboring mass. Now and then it gave off some half-stifled animal noises. A group of idle people were watching. Curious, they drew close, and someone prodded the mass with a stick. Because it was hungry, it reached out a brown, tentative finger. A mouth suddenly appearing in its sweating flesh opened and closed. The people were frightened. The woman screamed. They all hurriedly withdrew and immediately began building walls. Let's see. This is another poem which grew out of a dream. Sort of thing. I'm not even sure it's a poem. It's called The Basket of Flowers. The widow of Adam paid us a second visit. No one could remember what she brought on her first. This time it was a basket of flowers. They were a mottled blue and white with blushing centers. She said they reminded her of her departed husband. At first, they drooped somewhat. Then, as we watched, they straightened and began to move, darting and weaving like a basket of snakes. Their little red tongues stuck out and they hissed. As we sat there, stiff and speechless, they changed into small pink lungs and tried to inhale us. Great Society. Having been whipped through paradise and seen humanity strolling like an overfed beast set loose from its cage, a man may long for nothing so much as a house of snow, a blue stone for a lamp, and a skin to cover his head. This is an older poem, which I wrote about the time I wrote those poems that are now in Winter News, and I still like it and occasionally read it. It's called The Hermitage. In the forest below the stairs, I have a secret home. My name is carved in the roots. I have a crevice stuffed with moss and a couch of lemon burr. I sit and listen to the music of water dripping on a distant stone, or I sing to myself of stealth and loneliness. No one comes to see me, but I hear outside the scratching of claws, the warm, inquisitive breath. And once, in a strange silence, I felt quite close the beating of a human heart. On Banner Dome. Banner Dome is a hill or a mountain not far from where I live. And this is a an account, partly imaginary, of a climb to the top of this dome. 10 miles from home, I climbed through the clear spring sunlight and found in its island of melting snow the rocky meadow of Easter. Among spilled boulders, 4 huts tied in the shape of a cross tugged at their moorings. The loosened hand of a door clapped across the wilderness. The wind lifted a curtain that raced away like a flailing angel. In the creaking silence, I heard the effort of a murdered man, the one left behind, whose stretched lips torture the music of resurrection. The sunlight is never warm in such a place. To sleep there is to dream that the ropes that hold you to earth are letting go, and around the straining tent of your life there prowls and sniffs a fallen black star who overturns stones and devours the dead. This is a poem I personally don't care for. However, one or two people who I do care for like it. It's called The Dreamer. In his fantasies, he becomes a kind of gardener. He tends lovingly the destroyed blood, revives where possible the ruined nerves, watches the lung flowers expand for their memory of burning naphtha. Just once he wants to see how a gas-born infant can swim without arms and legs, so he fills the cradle with clinging oil, saying to himself, this will suffocate, this will waste, one drop will infect a nation. Then he invents a surprising dawn. As the well-meaning citizen opens his morning paper, the page begins to blossom. Beyond his breakfast, the house across the street sags and disappears. He sees a vista of fields and forests, which a savage innocence has sown with beavers. So in his ferocious daydreams, the unemployed adventurer rebuilds the earth with its moon craters and withering seas. I sometimes read, depending on how I feel about it, poems which, as far as I'm concerned, are still in a state of not being finished. I sometimes read them partly because now and then I get a reaction that might be some use, and I try to work on them again. This one is called, It Must All Be Done Over. Wherever I look, the houses are coming down. The yards are deserted. People have taken to tents and caravans, like restless cattle breaking stride, going off with their wagons under a rumbling cloud. I have begun to believe those rumors of the world's wheat being eaten by metallic grasshoppers and columns of brutal strangers advancing on the soil of Asia. A gross and sickening shadow covers the state. No one in power commands a listener. I hope I shall be able to leave without too much baggage or bitterness. I must make my life into an endless camp. Learn to build with air, water, and smoke. The Sweater of Vladimir Wysochewski. Facing the wind of the avenues one spring evening in New York, I wear under my thin jacket a sweater given me by the wife of a genial Manchurian. The warmth in that sweater changed the indifferent city block by block. The buildings were mountains that fled as I approached them. The traffic became sheep and cattle milling in muddy pastures. I could feel around me the large movements of men and horses. It was spring in Siberia or Mongolia, wherever I happened to be. Rough but honest voices called to me out of that solitude. They told me we are all tired of this coiling weight, the oppression of a long winter, that it was time to renew our life, burn the expired contracts, elect new governments. The old imperial sun has set, and I must write a poem to the emperor. I shall speak it like the man I should be, an inhabitant of the frontier, clad in sweat darkened wool, my face stained by wind and smoke. Surely the emperor and his court will want to know what a fine and generous revolution begins tomorrow in one of his remote provinces. Does anybody have anything to say besides me? No questions? Nothing? Yeah.
You have a poem that ends with the words "forever awakening."
Awakening forever? Yeah. I was at a little college in the Los Angeles area last week, and I read this to a small group, and before I read it, I talked about it a little bit and explained it. I don't think it helped any. Well, somebody said it did, and somebody said it didn't, so it's a question, really, whether talking about poems is any use, I don't know. Into the Glacier. With the green lamp of the spirit of sleeping water taking us by the hand. Deeper and deeper, a luminous blackness opening like the wings of a raven, as though a heavy wind were rising through all the houses we ever lived in. The cold rushing in, our blankets flying away into the darkness, and we, naked and alone, awakening forever. Yeah.
But
when
you build the other two there at the end,
we're not finished. What, this last one? Yes. I don't know which one you mean now. You mean the one that I read, the last one?
Yeah, the last two. You said you
haven't
finished.
No, I meant only that one which I was talking about. The one about the sweater I'm satisfied with, I think.
Well,
I don't know. Somebody pointed out to me that a couple of lines here in the second stanza didn't seem to be true. And now that I think about it, maybe they're not. I don't know. Anyway, it's, you know, a feeling I have that something needs to be done to it. I removed two or three lines from the original version of it, and I don't know whether it helped it or not. Maybe sometime before I can make up my mind about it, but I think there's something to be done somewhere. I like the last stanza and part of the second and most of the first. Yeah.
Do you read Faraday from the solstice?
Yeah. Slowly, pardon me. Slowly, without sun, the day sinks toward the close of December. It is minus 60 degrees. Over the sleeping houses, a dense fog rises. Smoke from banked fires, and the snowy breath of an abyss through which the cold town is perceptibly falling. As if death were a voice made visible with the power of illumination. Now in the white shadow of those streets, ghostly newsboys make their rounds, delivering to the homes of those who have died of the frost, word of the resurrection of silence. Well, I think I'm done meeting.